First of all, to whom the gift is given. Ideally, in principle, all sentient beings, all living beings whatsoever, are the objects of the Bodhisattva's generosity. That's the ideal. That's the principle. But it's practically impossible. Very, very few people are ever in the position of being able to benefit the whole human race. But at least one must uphold the ideal. The scriptures especially mention three classes of recipients to whom the Bodhisattva should pay particular attention. First of all, it says, his own or her own friends and relations. In other words, the familiar proverb, which we've already quoted in another context, charity begins at home. It's no use the Bodhisattva or the would-be Bodhisattva being very, very kind and very friendly so far as strangers and people outside are concerned, but at home he's a difficult and awkward and uncomfortable person to live with, if not actually cruel. Sometimes you find cases of this sort. Someone has a wonderful reputation outside his home or her home for being so kind and so generous and so good, but at home, well, either they're a petty tyrant or something else equally unpleasant. So therefore, the tradition says that the recipients of the Bodhisattva's generosity are in the first place his own kith and kin, his own friends, and his own relations. Charity begins at home. But the emphasis is very much on the verb. It begins at home. It doesn't by any means end at home. In this way, it's rather like the practice of metta, when you start with yourself and then the near and dear friend and so on, and then you go on to all the people in the room and all the people in the town and the country and the continent. Eventually you come to the whole world, the whole universe. So generosity, giving, should be like this. It may begin right on your own doorstep, right in your own home, but you should try to extend it ever wider and wider. In fact, as widely as you possibly can. Now, the second class of people who should especially be recipients of the Bodhisattva's generosity are first the poor, then the sick, the afflicted, and the helpless. And among the helpless, tradition includes all animals. Now, I dealt with this last week, more or less, when speaking of the first of the four great vows of the Bodhisattva. In other words, the vow to deliver all sentient beings from difficulties. So I'll say nothing more about it now. And thirdly, third of the special recipients of the Bodhisattva's generosity, those who are leading a full-time religious life. This may be new to some people, but traditionally Buddhism considers it the duty of society, of the community at large, to support all those who are engaged in any kind of higher spiritual or higher creative work and activity. Usually, of course, it amounts to helping, supporting monks, nuns, lamas, spiritual teachers, and so on. But ideally, it should include all those who are engaged in any kind of higher creative work, including painters, musicians, writers, and so on. But at the same time, there should be, on the part of society, on the part of the community, no attempt to coerce either the religious person, the full-time religious person, or the full-time artist into conforming to the ideas and ideals of the supporting society, the supporting community itself. Complete freedom is essential, both for the religious person and for the creative, the artistic person. Usually, of course, the at least implied condition of any sort of support from society or from the community is that one should support the status quo. And if one does this, one can be sure, usually, of some kind of support, but not otherwise. But this, from a Buddhist point of view, is completely and entirely wrong. The support should be a free support, whether it's given to the religious people, the full-time religious people, or to the artistically creative. So much, then, for our first heading, to whom the gift is given.